Okay. During the Sandy 12 budget, division will come to order. Today's Monday, March 23rd, 2015. It's 8:30 a.m. We're in room 112 at the State Capitol. We have several bills before us. The first two bill authors are not here yet, so we're going to go to Senate File 1141, Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, it pays to get here early, and I'm pleased that you're offering this spot to us. I have a bill that's very important for me and the immediate school districts. Senate File 1141 is a bill for taking a recommendation from the School Facilities Working Group. It's recommendation number four. And what we have done is put together a bill called titled School Facilities Improvement Revenue. It really is just another means to take care of the issue of a group of schools that need it, and that would be the intermediate school districts. Superintendent from the 916 district, which represents the school districts that I represent, and Scott Krumpus from the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, speak about this bill.
Thank you, Sarah Johnson. Welcome to the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Scott Krunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I'll go first just to give a real brief overview and then let Superintendent Hayes talk in a little more detail, especially from the intermediate's perspective. Members, as you know, you've heard an overview of the overall school facilities working group's recommendations, and then also Senator Dahl has had the recommendation number one legislation that expanding the deferred maintenance access to deferred maintenance revenue to all school districts. And then you also heard expanding debt service equalization to address property tax fairness. And as Senator Johnson said, this is recommendation number four coming out of that task force. And just as a reminder, this was a broad, diverse task force that included school board members, superintendents, business managers, parents, facilities managers, and it covered urban, suburban, rural, so it really covered the whole gamut. And I think if you ask any of the education organizations, there's broad support for the recommendations coming out of that working group. This bill would implement recommendation number four, which basically expands the existing lease levy and would allow school districts to use that stream of revenue for things like improving facilities, expanding security and safety measures. As you all know, there's been a really strong emphasis on that, given some of the tragedies that have occurred across the nation. And so districts are really trying to make sure their school entrances are secure. And the reality is they just don't have a reliable funding stream to address those needs. So this would provide that. So with that, I will turn it over to Superintendent Hayes to talk in a little more detail about some of the recommendations. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Connie Hayes. I'm superintendent at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District, and I'm here to speak on behalf of all three of the intermediate districts here in the Twin Cities. Many of you know that the intermediates serve the students with the greatest challenges in federal setting for special education programs here in the metro area. In the last 8 to 10 years, as this population has presented more significant aggressive behaviors, we have learned the importance of how school design can either enhance learning and safety or contribute to a more chaotic environment that negatively impacts learning and safety for students and staff. To that point, our facility we opened in Blaine this fall is a testament to how design can transform the educational experience for these students. We are seeing better student outcomes and decreases in injuries to staff. However, the intermediates have a very narrow list of revenue sources to meet our facility needs. We do get a small amount of capital dollars on the formula. However, most of our students are actually counted in the member district. What that equates to for 916 is that we get about $80,000 a year in capital revenue. Health and safety is also one of our revenue sources that we get through our member districts. However, our largest source of revenue is the lease levy authority, which is $65 per pupil unit through our member districts. And it specifically meets our facility needs in a number of ways. However, it is limited, and that's why this bill is before you today. The capacity is $65 that is available. However, the revenue source cannot be used for the following. We cannot remodel existing spaces to meet the needs of these learners. We cannot add on additional classrooms when member and non-member districts need placements for students. We cannot address any of our long-term maintenance needs in our buildings. And we cannot improve safety and security in our facilities. The expansion in the use of our lease levy authority, which is part of this bill, would allow the intermediate school districts to consider a major remodel of an older building. Our 916 school board is, in fact, currently studying the possibility to either remodel our 1950 building called Capital View Center, which is in Little Canada, or to replace it. Without the expanded use of the lease levy authority in this bill, the remodel option will not be available to the 916 school board. The intermediate school districts greatly appreciate your support for our needs and hope you will consider our needs specifically within Senate File 1141. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent. And is Marilyn Forsberg here?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to say Mrs. Forsberg will not be here today. She is my neighbor and been my good friend for over 40 years, and she is on the Spring Lake Park School District, and I think she's been on about 30 years on that school district. She cannot be here, but she is the person who brought it to my attention regarding being able to use and remodel the Capital View School rather than looking at trying to lease another facility that would not be as appropriate for the needs of the school district, of the intermediate school district. So you're missing a little yourself by not having Marilyn here. She's very, very articulate and very passionate about these issues.
Oh, she's here in spirit.
Yes.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that'd like to address Senate File 1141? And members, we have had the report on the School Facilities Task Force. There's no question this is a recommendation. There's a lot of need that's out there. Perhaps less dollars available than we would like in terms of fully addressing everything, but it will all be in play as we review our target and eventual bill over the next few weeks. So if there is further comment or discussion, then we'll entertain a motion to lay over for possible inclusion. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple questions.
I have a question.
And one of them is, does this get implemented with a voter referendum, or is this a board decision?
Let me answer that. Okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman. Member, this is through a board recommendation. Would be for the intermediate school district, where our board is made up of one school board member from each of our 12 member districts, and it would be a vote of the 916 school board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the section one there, are those prioritized in order of importance, or are they just random?
I don't think that was any. Oh, here. It's here. Is it that one? Is it here? Just the
Superintendent or
Mr. Chairman, Kronquist? Senator Stump, Scott Kronquist with AMSD. I don't believe the task force listed in a priority, was just listing the possible allowable uses, and that would be very helpful to school districts.
Would Mr. Chairman, would it be possible, do you think, not right now, obviously, but when you look at that, which ones might be the most in need immediate need, kind of in your estimation. That might be helpful to us.
It would, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump. That seems like a reasonable request, and I think we could do that. I think there are, different facilities that will have different requests, so it's kind of difficult to know which one is most prominent. We know for 916 what is important.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, Scott Kronquist again. And just as a reminder, number one on that list is actually what school districts can currently use the revenue for, and that's the lease agreements. And I should have mentioned in my earlier remarks, this was an absolute critical revenue stream in meeting the needed classroom space for full day K. And it was really thanks to this committee. The Senate committee really led the charge on that last year. I believe Senator Claussen had the bill, and you expanded the lease levy authority. And quite frankly, if you hadn't done that, we would not have seen the successful rollout of full day K that we have seen this year. Districts really use that authority. So thank you for your great work that you did on that last year.
Noted. Thank you. Is there anyone else I'd like to address Senate File 1141? If not, Senate File 1141 be laid on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, Senate File 341, Senator Rosen, and we invite Superintendent Brown to join you. And we welcome each of you back to the committee. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Mr. Chair, Senate File 341 expands the health and safety revenue to include facility modifications to make school facilities more secure for students and their staff. And, Mr. Chair, members, I have the A1 amendment, a delete all.
Okay. Senator Saxhog moves the A1. It's an author's amendment. In favor, indicate aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Yeah. Senate File 341 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this amendment does is basically takes out the language on page 1, line 10, remodeling of education facilities. That really scales it down quite a bit because the fiscal note was coming in pretty high, and it reduces the scope of the bill. So in section 1, it really just talks about, what is available the revenue for the fund. In section 2, the district must submit a plan to the commissioner describing the facility improvements, providing proof they will enhance the safety. And their fiscal note, I would assume, is in front of you, Mr. Chair. And with me, I have Superintendent Brown from Fairmont School District. And from there, we can...
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Education Committee. I am Joseph E. Brown, Senior Superintendent of Fairmont Area Schools, located in South Central Minnesota. I am pleased to be here today to, with our State Senator Julie Rosen, to voice my support in favor of Senate File 341. In 1997, I was serving as the Lesure Henderson High School principal. At 9:30 a.m. on 9/11/1997, a 10th grade student ran into Lesure Henderson High School with 122 rounds of ammo, a 9mm handgun, and an assault rifle with a list of 10 females he wanted to kill. 7 10th grade girls, 2 female math teachers, and 1 female dean of students. Due to obtaining an advance warning by 2 ninth grade girls the day before, we were in a code red lockdown situation. While being arrested in a second floor bathroom, Corey Leonard shot Sergeant Tom Nelson of the Lesure Police Department in the head. Sergeant Nelson lived, and Corey Leonard served the next 15 years in prison in St. Cloud. This incident in Lesure, Minnesota, was 19 months prior to Columbine. Since Columbine, a lot of things have happened in schools, and schools have become more safe. School security, as you can tell, is a very important personal issue to me. You might be interested to note that since the Newtown, Connecticut shooting 2 years ago, there have been over 100 school shootings in this country. Half of them are at universities, half of them are in K-12 schools. Schools have already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars from their general fund for school security. Senate File 341 will allow school boards to levy local property taxes for approved expenditures for security improvements related to improving the physical safety of students and staff, facility security enhancements including laminated glass, public announcement systems, emergency communication devices, and equipment and facility modifications related to violence prevention and facility security. Fairmont Junior Senior High School has 96 security cameras. Fairmont Elementary School has 84 security cameras. We have just completed a $110,000 upgrade to our file servers. Senator, can you amend the bill to go backwards? No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, but we've just did an upgrade to our file servers, our cameras, our security software, and public address system. We also added strobe lights in the vocational shops, our gymnasiums, and our band, choir, and orchestra classrooms so that when we have a code red situation, we can obtain the attention of students and staff for a public address announcement. Well, Fairmont area schools, like many schools across the state, except for the largest 25, has a limited budget for capital and deferred maintenance. Most of these expenditures had to come from our general fund, which should be used for student instruction, not for student and staff protection. You might be interested also that Fairmont area schools, our school board this last year, in the last few months, has reduced next year's property taxes by 7.82%. I'll say that again. We reduced our local property taxes by 7.82%, $436,000 of savings to the local property taxes. How do we do that? Well, first of all, we refinanced some building bonds at a lower rate. But second of all, most of our health and safety projects are done. Our big ones are done. And so having a bill like this would be wonderful so that we could do the things we need to do without taking the money from the general fund or from teachers and students. This year, the city of Fairmont had their local government aid reduced by over $100,000. For the past 6 years, the city of Fairmont has paid for our school resource officer. Due to tight budgets, Fairmont Area Schools has gone without a school resource officer for the first time in 11 years. I would hope that the legislature might consider amending Senate File 341 to allow school districts to levy to pay for school resource officers. Again, historically, about 15 years ago, we had the COPS grant from the federal government, and that paid for school resource officers. And then cities and schools did kind of a 50-50 split. In 2008, we had severe budget reductions, and the city picked up our SRO. Now that the city's had a budget reduction, we don't have an SRO. Another issue that may affect many of the school districts, and this is really key, is the fact that the new radio system that was installed by the state of Minnesota 2 years ago for our county and city law enforcement and fire departments does not work in many of our public school buildings due to the location of the telecommunication towers located throughout the county. In Fairmont area schools, we have identified multiple dead zones where law enforcement radios do not work. It is ironic that they are called dead zones because this is what they will be if we ever have an active shooter in our school. Police radios do not work in our elementary offices, our district offices. They also do not work in the lower level of our high school that has 250 students in band, choir, and orchestra. We have received estimates that it will cost approximately $100,000 to install telecommunication repeaters throughout our public schools to ensure that public police and fire department radios will work with a new armor system. Even though this is not the school's fault, the police radios do not work in parts of our school. And by the way, we're not the only school. And I would ask all of you to maybe go back home and verify with your local law enforcement and fire departments and superintendents to see if they've done a test. We've looked around, and it doesn't work in our county. By the way, our county sheriff points out that current legislation does not allow 9/11 funds to pay for these needed upgrades. I would ask each legislator to check with your local police and fire departments to see if the radios work in all parts of your school buildings. Because of the need for local school districts to install telecommunication repeaters throughout our schools, I would ask the legislature to consider amending 341 to take effect in fiscal year 2016 in lieu of 2017. I really don't think, knowing what we know about these radios not working throughout the state in our public schools, we could not wait. We should not wait another year. It would be terrible to have a mass shooting in any of our schools without the ability to communicate with local police and fire. Once again, I'm a strong supporter of Senate File 341. I want to personally thank our senator, Senator Rosen, and her co-sponsors for this important and timely piece of legislation. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Superintendent Brown. Very compelling case. Questions, comments, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Brown, First of all, sympathy to you and your school district for what had to be a very painful situation, no doubt about it. I had a question, but prior to that, I serve on the Transportation Public Safety Committee, and there's the ARMOR system, which is paid for out of 911, and the express purpose of that is to see to it that we do have coverage. So I want to really take a look at this. I don't know that it needs to come out of education funding, because this was meant for very broad, to make sure that they could communicate. So if you want to comment to that, I just have a different question, but maybe it looks like you might have some information in regards to that.
Mr. Chairman,
Superintendent,
we were one of the first schools to identify this issue about 9 months ago, and we actually had a telecommunications company from Mankato, Minnesota, come in and went around to all the schools in Martin County. We have 4 public schools and 3 private schools. And because of the structure of our buildings, you know, let's face it, we build schools out of stone. And because of that, and because many of our buildings, some of them are underground, they just don't work. And when I met with our local county sheriff, and I think he's correct, he showed me a copy of the current statute, and there are other buildings in Fairmont where police and fire radios do not work also. And he's of the impression that even though there's $600,000 in that local fund right now, he could easily pay for this. He feels that if he paid for ours, he'd have to pay for some private sector. And but it is a serious issue. It's something that should be addressed, not just for us. I'm convinced it's an issue all throughout the state of Minnesota.
And Mr. Chair, if I may add to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Kiffmeyer. Unfortunately, not all the counties are on ARMOR also out in greater Minnesota. And there is also counties, the border states cannot converse with counties over in Iowa or Wisconsin. So we're having a problem getting ARMOR funded. Some of the counties took that investment early on, and there's been many bills going through tax committee to give some kind of tax break for the other counties that want to hook up on to ARMOR. So it's still not a succinct system throughout the state, unfortunately.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I
would just like to support Superintendent Brown and Senator Rosen. About 12 years ago, when I was a high school principal, discovered the same problem, and communications is absolutely critical in an emergency situation. Not only mass communication versus your intercom system, but then the personal one-to-one communication using handheld devices. So I certainly support this, and it's something that's very much needed.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about the fiscal note, because as I hear the proposal, it sounds like it's a levy, only it says that there isn't a tax impact. So wouldn't it be carried in the tax bill? I mean, wouldn't that be part of our levy target with regard to the tax?
Yes, there is a levy, and it would be included in addressing target. If staff would like to elaborate further, Mr. Wilms.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, if you look to page 4 of the fiscal note, there's no line number, but you see towards the bottom on the left side, there's a total levy change amount. In page 16, fiscal year 17, it's approximately $4 million. Fiscal year 18 is approximately $8 million. And then in fiscal year 19, approximately $14.5 million. The aid cost noted in the fiscal note comes from any equalization that the school districts would get on their levy.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just want to echo Senator Claussen's comments that once we learn of a safety issue that's as broad and far-reaching as this, I, too, believe, you know, we have to take action. And so thank you, Senator Rosen. Thank you, Superintendent, for bringing it to our attention. Of course, we'd all rather that the Public Safety Division carry that cost, but either way, it seems like it's something that should be taken care of.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rosen, for bringing this. You know, as Superintendent Brown, nice to see you again. And you started talking about safety. I looked over, and we have the Assistant Chief Brewley from Brooklyn Park Police. And as you know, I was on the school board for 8 years. Sorry about that. That was supposed to be funny. We had a concern at Champlain Park High School. There was dead zones, and I don't know if it's ever been fixed, but that's pretty scary when you think you've got up to 3,600 youth in a big brick building, and you got zones where you don't know where your officers are if something were to happen, and it's that if something were to happen. And I like what Senator Kiffmeyer is saying about the armor connection, and I hope that opens up a whole new discussion, but I'm glad we started here first and that safety gets a hold of it. So I'm going to join Senators Claussen and Bonhoff and Kiffmeyer on this as well, and thanks for bringing this forward.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
If I may say, too, right now I'm over in Health and Human Services. That's where I sit normally. And we have invested in the mental health schooling programs. And it was a pilot project the last biennium. But we need to put more money into our mental health programs for our children. And that has been very, very successful. But as you know, they're arriving to school, and many of these children have issues that need to be addressed when it comes to mental health. So it's a bigger, broader issue that I think affects many other committees, just not K-12.
Thank you. Further comments, questions from the committee? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address us? If not, Senate File 341, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Wilms, too. He did a great job on the fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Rosen.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown. Okay, Senate File 1781, Senator Pappas, and we invite your testifiers to join you. Members, there is an author's amendment, 1781A, which inserts a dollar amount, $375,000. We'll entertain that as soon as you'd like, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Johnson moves the A1 amendment, which inserts the amount of $375,000. All in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed?
Carried. We have Senate File 1781 as amended. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This proposal is for the state to help fund a program to provide Hmong, Burmese, Karen, Bhutanese, and other groups of Southeast Asian immigrants and refugees in communities with concentrated Hmong and Southeast Asian populations with culturally specific navigators or outreach workers that will actually be able to reach out to families so to increase their access to available financial and program resources for early childhood care and education, early childhood health and development screening, and early reading readiness for English learners, which, you know, we all have recognized as very important. They would also provide translation and interpretation services, and also we would establish a parent leadership committee to provide parents with knowledge, the skills, and resources they need to be active partners in their children's education. With me, I have Dr. Xiaolong Shang, chairman of the Hmong National Development, and he's going to talk a little bit about the importance of this issue.
Yes.
Welcome, Dr. Shang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's important to focus on early childhood and parent engagement in the Asian, or particularly Southeast Asian, population. As you know, Minnesota is home to 4.7% Asian American. And Asian American in Minnesota is very unique because most of them are all former refugees. Indeed, 59.5% of the Southeast Asian are actually foreign born, so it's very important. Many of them still do not speak English and face significant barriers for accessing resources. On your handout, on the, I believe, page 3-4, there's actually a demographic map that actually detailing Hmong, Cambodian, Lao, and Karen or Burmese, which will actually give you a clear picture of where the Southeast Asian population are located in Minnesota. And many of them, indeed, 85% of the Southeast Asian population are actually located in the 7th County metro area. Now, Hmong in particular, it's the largest Asian or Southeast Asian population in Minnesota. And most of them, 59%, actually live in Ramsey County. Hmong and many of the Southeast Asian population are very, very young. if you look at the statistics, 43% of their population are actually under the age of 18. And the age from 0 to 5, it's about 13% compared to 7% of the general population. So we have a very young population. And more importantly, we know that parents' education and parents' income, it's one of the most robust predictors of children's education. And of course, Southeast Asian, more in particular, are very, very poor. 27% of their population are still living under the poverty line. And so I think it's very important for us to reach out to this population because they have a lot of barriers to our resources, and we have wonderful early childhood resources in our community, and I want to make sure that this population is able to reach out to all these resources so that they could also integrate into this wonderful state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chung.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next, I have Mr. Dai Tao, who is on the St. Paul City Council.
Welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. You know, we, as a city council person, a lot of the things that I deal with is at the forefront of the symptom, but this pilot program really addresses the root cause of some of the disparity that we have in our community. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge the work that you've been doing for our state, and we really appreciate your leadership. We come before you with great hope and your wisdom and your leadership and your motivation for early childhood education equity. Before you, the evidence are quite clear that we could do more, that behind these statistics are real children and parents who need access to early childhood education opportunity. It's just a small snapshot of what's happening in Frogtown or in the Promise neighborhood, where we strategically, intentionally reach out to the Asian community. 650 family or children are qualified for the early child education, but only 35 family know about it or are part of this program. So definitely we could do more in that sense. I believe that our futures in our city, the future of our city and state, depends on piloting these preventive measures and tools, and they need to implement now. So there's a great opportunity before us to implement these sort of pilot so that we can reverse the statistic and reverse the achievement gap. So honorable chair and committee members, I hope that you will please give this pilot a chance and give these kids and their family opportunity to be productive Americans and to be leaders of our state.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I have Singling Lee, who is a parent.
Welcome, Ms. Lee.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. I'm a parent. My name is Singling Lee, and I'm a parent to three little beautiful kids, ages 2, 3, and 4. My oldest, 4, she was able to get to go to school in pre-K half day in Groveland because a spot opened up there. I do live in the St. Paul Promise neighborhood, and I didn't know of the scholarships available to my kids. I heard about the St. Paul Promise neighborhood scholarship early learning, and so we got on the list, and just this year, I've been fortunate to receive the St. Paul Province Neighborhood Early Learning Scholarship for two of my children. And so they attend one of the 4-star rated quality child care and early education centers, which means that their maximum scholarship value is up to $5,000. So we had been on the waiting list for over a year, and so I was ecstatic to hear that my kids were receiving the scholarships, the two older ones. And so now they are in a quality, structured learning environment with other children. It was an easy choice to choose a high-quality child care through the Parent Aware program that would help with kindergarten readiness. Without this scholarship, I would be unable to fully pay for this for my two children this year, and I would continue to struggle with the choice to stay home to watch my kids instead. And so when child care costs more than what I make at my job, obviously the hard choice is to be with my children. So this early learning scholarship has given some relief to the challenge to pay for quality child care, and it helps me to keep a continuous care for my children through quality programming. This supports my employment. It supports my children's learning. And so my children now know how to spell their names, recognize their letters, know how to count. So I'm very proud of them, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to have the scholarship. I heard about the scholarship not through, I from what I'm aware of, the schools that if your kids were to attend, you would hear about this resource. I heard about it through an outside entity. And I just wanted to share that there are more than over 300 Southeast Asian and Hmong families in our St. Paul Promise neighborhood alone who could use this support, and less than 9% of Asian descent receive this support to give relief to these working families. Demographics in our state are changing, and the access to early learning scholarship receivers does not reflect that of our Southeast Asian communities, showing that this resource is not reaching our ethnic minorities, especially our immigrants and refugee families. And that is all I wanted to share. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and committee members.
Thank you. Ms. Lee, Senator Barnoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I think perhaps somebody from the department might be best able to answer this, but I'm surprised, given we did the $40 million in scholarships, as well as the St. Paul Promise neighborhood has access to the early childhood Race to the Top, as I understand, why the disparity in families able to access these scholarships? It seems as though, and they were, that particular neighborhood, as I recall, was part of the original Parent Aware pilot. So it seems a disconnect that we're not serving more families.
Chair Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, I won't pretend that I know all the statistics about the St. Paul Promise neighborhood, but there certainly are families outside of the Promise neighborhood that still would be eligible for scholarships and would also be eligible for preschool programs in their school districts. This isn't just for St. Paul. And I think because we don't have enough culturally specific outreach workers to talk to them, there's language difficulties, that they're just not finding out enough about what resources are available. So this proposal is really to try to see with, you know, specific outreach workers, navigators, if we can get more people signed up for these programs.
It looks like somebody from the department wants to say something.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ty,
would you mind asking you for a minute?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm with Minnesota Department of Education. Senator Bonoff, I do not have the information on hand in terms of why these disparities are happening in terms of access, but we would be more than happy to go back to the department, talk to our experts in the early learning division, and get you that information as soon
Thank
as possible.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, that follow-up's noted. Further testimony, anyone in the audience like to address us on the proposal? Additional comments or questions from the committee? Oh, okay, we have another testifier. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers, and I lead APAC, which is a housing consortium. I want to thank Senator Pappas and the other legislators for bringing this forward, as there are disparities among the Asian community as far as access to resources. I would also like to point out that some of the other minorities or Asians who are also need these exact services include the Chinese, the Asian Indian, and the Koreans. So although this bill addresses just the Southeast Asians and the Hmong, there's a need for these other communities too. Now, I'm very impressed that among the Hmong, they have had representatives elected, senators elected, city council people elected, but there have been none among the other ethnicities except for Satvir Chaudhry, you know, some time ago. So this is an area where there does need to be the pathways to government and for success, and it begins when they're young. The other thing I'd like to point out is that the Asian Pacific community has over 266,000 in their population. Most of them, I would say over half, would be considered immigrants. And the Ombudsman for Children and Families, which I helped create, they service all Asian Pacific children and families. So they have seen the backside of the need for this early help that the families need early on. So we encourage your support, but would also like inclusion of the other ethnicity, Asian ethnicities. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pappas, further comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the time of the committee this morning.
Senate File 1781, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus finance bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas, and to your testifiers. Next, we'll go to Senate File 832, Senator Saxhog, and we would ask your testifiers to join you. You'll be followed by Senator Stumpf, Senate File 1675. Welcome, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 832 proposes to increase the annual base aid for regional public libraries from $13.57 million to $18.75 million. And the annual multi-county, multi-type library aid from $1.3 million to $2.6 million. The seven multi-county, multi-type library systems expand library services by facilitating cooperation among academic libraries, public libraries, school libraries, media centers, and special libraries. With me today is Barbara Masselt, director at East Central Regional Library, and Ann Walker, Smalley, director at Metronet, to give some brief presentations and help answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Senator Saxhagen. Welcome to the testifiers.
Senator Wieger and members of the committee, I would like to direct your attention to your packet.
For the tape and viewers, if you could state your name for the record.
I'm Barbara Missel, director of East Central Regional Library System.
Thank you.
I'd like to direct your attention to your packets. You have a folder that has a map of the regional public library systems in it, in case you need to know where some of them are. You also have an infographic that illustrates our request. As I said, I'm director of East Central Regional Library System. ECRL, as it's known, is one of the 12 regional public library systems that receive Regional Library Basic Systems Support, or as we call it, RLBSS. We have 14 branch libraries and a mobile outreach vehicle serving people in the counties of Chisago, Isanti, Mille Lacs, Kennebec, Aiken, and Pine. ECRL is a consolidated library system with a $3 million budget. The majority of the budget is funded by the participating counties, and most of the remainder is funded by RLBSS. As the senator said, RLBSS is currently funded at $13.57 million. Our last increase was passed in 2007. Since then, libraries across the state have experienced increases in the use of library services caused by the expansion of e-government and other forces which are entirely out of our control. Since state funds have not increased and we haven't reduced critical services, local entities have borne the brunt of increased costs. When the economic downturn occurred, many people became unemployed. Many went back to school via online learning, and the public library became their learning library. They needed books for their programs that aren't typically found in a public library, and we were able to order them through interlibrary loan from college libraries across the state. We provide daily delivery so that those people could get those books, and when the price of gas increased, we continued that delivery because we knew that they needed those books, and our costs went up considerably. In addition to needing interlibrary loans for their classes, many unemployed people came to our branch libraries for help in using computers to file unemployment claims. Even now, with many people in East Central Minnesota still unemployed or underemployed, we serve a large part of the workforce in finding and applying for jobs, especially since few of the 14 communities that my regional library serves have workforce development centers. In addition to our traditional library services, we've also assumed responsibilities for other services that regularly bring people to the library. At the height of the foreclosure crisis, my library system was part of a regional roundtable to provide information for homeowners in crisis. Beginning last year, we provided information and host sites for MNsure signups. And then there's tax season, which really doesn't end on April 15th. While libraries have traditionally provided tax forms, several years ago, the post office ceased providing any tax information, and we became the sole distribution point for state and federal instructions and forms. Then this year, the IRS did not provide instruction booklets to libraries, as they have in the past, and they didn't even tell us until the tax season was ready to start. We've been scrambling to find the additional time to assist people to download and print forms. We've also provided phone information to contact the IRS. At the same time, as the educational institution for all ages, our libraries are embracing the priorities of the Department of Education. In support of pre-literacy, we're implementing smart play spaces and enhanced learning experiences for children and families, such as the statewide One Book program. We're partnering with Head Start statewide, and my regional library is bringing the Once Upon a Reader program to the reservation Head Starts. We're providing books, e-books to students, and doing training and library card signups in the schools. For adults, we're engaged in a wide variety of technology literacy initiatives. Whether a Minnesota citizen lives in the metropolitan area or uses a small outstate library such as the Mille Lacs Lake Community Library, regional libraries are united in a commitment that no Minnesotan should be informationally disadvantaged by where they live. I encourage you to fully fund our request of $18.57 million of regional library basic system support for each year in the next biennium. I would also add that the next bill you will hear is also about RLBSS, and it's sponsored by Senator Taxhawk. My board and I also support that bill.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Ann Walker Smalley, and I'm the director of Metronet, which is the multi-type, multi-county library system that serves the seven-county Twin Cities area. We're headquartered in St. Paul. Thank you for inviting us to testify today. Multi-county, multi-type library systems, really, we just say multi-types, that's a mouthful. We're cooperative networks of all types of libraries, school, public, academic, and special. We work at the grassroots level to help connect those libraries and their services to each other and also to residents of Minnesota. There are seven of these systems across the state. They're all governed by individual boards that are made up of citizens and librarians. The librarian advise the citizens on the board as they do their assessment about what services are needed in each of the individual regions. So there's not a uniform set of services that are offered across all seven, although we do all provide training and other opportunities. Most of us focus on working with school libraries. I'm sure you know that school library media specialists have been a vanishing breed in Minnesota and across the country. There are some hopeful signs about that. We know St. Paul Public Schools, for example, is now rehiring media specialists. But we work with those media specialists that are out there to help them advance their knowledge and information. One of the most important, if not the most important thing multi-types do is leverage the investments that the state legislature as well as individual organizations, particularly school districts, make in the resources, whether they're hardware or other information resources, by offering trainings and advanced tech skill training. In Metronet, we have a year-long training program that we do in collaboration with local school districts. This year, we're in St. Paul Public Schools and Minneapolis Public Schools. It's a 70-hour training that lasts from August till May. And we teach teachers how to teach their students how to do research and also implement information literacy skills. We started with secondary teachers, and now we do include K-5 because learning information literacy begins in pre-K. We heard the importance of early literacy skills from the previous testifiers and also within the regional public library systems. But we help these teachers get their students college and career ready with these skills. When St. Paul rolled out their one-to-one iPad initiative, their media staff turned to MetroNet to help train that library staff on how to effectively and efficiently use iPads in a classroom. And so we have about 55 staff members from St. Paul in our training this year so that they can learn to be the go-to iPad people in their buildings. One of the participants recently said that she showed her teachers some apps that she learned in Millie, and if you have paged through the approximately 1 million iPad education apps that are out there, you'll know that she saved her staff a lot of time and a lot of frustration. So we really do help relieve both the expense but also the stress of creating high-quality training that is important for successful rollouts of these high-intensity hardware initiatives to make sure that they are used for educational purposes in the classroom. We also work with library staff. We have had several online self-paced programs developed. The most recent one was around, it was called 23 Mobile Things. So we were teaching library staff from all types of libraries on using apps and devices, both all kinds of devices, actually, iPads, telephones, whatever. Did we say telephone? Cell phone. So we really do work hard to make sure that library staff is up to date with those technology skills. As a result of 23 Mobile Things, there are app experts in libraries across the state on using apps in education, in business, and for lifelong learning. All the multi-types do this kind of training, and over the last year, we offered 129 different workshops on topics ranging from copyright, fair use, and plagiarism to using tools for the flipped classroom. We also, of course, partner with others. We are small. We do a lot with our allocation of the last few years of $1.3 million, so we really try not to do anything without a partner or two. And while we're small, both in dollars and in staff, we really do think we're mighty. There's a lot of impact in what we do. We know that libraries turn to us for help in technology, in library operations and processes, particularly school libraries. And while we don't have money to buy the stuff that other libraries do, we use the our knowledge to improve library services across the state. But in that 8 years since our last increase, I've really seen things begin to erode. We have had to reduce the number of trainings, particularly the number of in-depth trainings that we're allowed to able to do, and our ability to assist our members for library operations, weeding those school libraries or other improvements. And it's also been very difficult to develop these big in-depth online trainings, which really make a difference across the state. You have before you a summary of what we did with our $1.3 million, and the reverse of that will show some suggested things that we would be able to do with this increase. And if you're wondering where your multi-type is located, this brochure also includes a list of those seven and how to get in touch with them. So we really do appreciate the opportunity to ask for an increase. And our multi-type, multi-county library systems really are about making all types of libraries stronger for residents and students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a general question, clarification, maybe a refresher. In terms of the funding for the different regional systems, I assume looking at populations, distances, that the funding is a combination of those factors. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. For the multi-types, there's a base amount that is allocated out of that $1.3 million, and then the remaining is divided on a formula that takes into consideration population and geographic distance. So Metronet has the largest budget because we have the largest population. Northern Lights Library Network, which is now headquartered in Moorhead and covers the entire northwest quadrant of the state, their budget is second because of the geography factor.
Further questions, comments? Senator Deems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Senator Saxhog or who would like to answer this question, but on this handout here, it shows we have seven regional libraries. And when I go to the sheet that shows the distribution of that additional $5 million, I think there's like 11, about 12 different groups that would be receiving a share of this $5 million. Can you explain what that difference is?
Senator and committee.
Ms. Smalley, for the tape, Ms. Smalley, state your name again.
My name is Ann Walker Smalley. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, the difference between the two types of library systems are the regional public library systems only serve public libraries. They do collaborate with other types of libraries on specific things, but they are those who operate or coordinate services, depending on the system that they're in, for the local public library systems. The seven regional multi-county multi-type systems works with all types of libraries. So while public libraries are definitely members, our real focus are school and academic and special libraries and working with those to expand their resources and knowledge through collaboration and cooperation, often with our regional public library system, but also with other organizations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address Senate File 832? If not, Senate File 832 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. And continuing the discussion on regional library system support, Senator Stump, Senate File 1675. And we ask your testifiers to join you. Following Senate File 1675, we'll have Senate File 1179, Senator Hoffman. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everyone. The 1675 relates to our libraries, too, but it has a different function. And what 1675 does is try to address through the change in the formula on how this money is distributed. And I think you'll hear from those that testify that because of the funding mechanism is based partially on property taxes and other funds, that over time the formula has gotten out of adjustment. And so that's what 1675 does, is try to bring that back into some kind of a little bit of a more equal equitable funding for all of the different regional library systems. And there's one other point I was going to make. I think we should go ahead with our testimony. And we have a handout here that I think will give you a little more of a picture of what we're trying to do.
Okay. My name is Ann Hutton. I am from Rochester. I'm the executive director for Southeastern Libraries Cooperating, one of the 12 regional library systems. I appreciate this chance to speak with the committee today. I appreciate the authorship of and leadership of Senator Saxhog on the previous bill. I was honored to testify in the House on the House Companion Bill. And I do appreciate Senator Stumpf and the members of this committee who have signed on to Senate File. Excuse me.
That's all right.
Here, take mine. There we go. Senate File 1675. As was mentioned in the earlier testimony, The last increase in regional library basic system support was 8 years ago. At that point, the legislature chose to add $5 million to the formula. Senator Weber, you were very astute in asking your question about how this formula is funded. The base is on there's a large portion of the money that is appropriated on the basis of population, which makes sense because libraries serve people. There's a component that also deals with geography, which likewise makes sense if you're in a smaller geographic region like mine, from Rochester to Winona. The geographic is not so distance, is not so challenging as moving that book from Cloquet to International Falls. There is a small amount that is assigned to a base. And then the fourth factor, which I have come to believe is makes very good theoretical sense, is based on property values. And the idea there is as property values go up locally, local government will assess more taxes or have the capacity to assess more taxes. And as property values decrease, then the state will cushion. What has happened, both in the, as the legislature in the last 25 years, because the new form, what we call the new formula or the current formula, was put into place in 1991. There have been changes that the legislature has made with property market values, and also the most recent housing changes or housing market changes. And what we have seen is a radical shift in where those property value dollars go, that portion of the formula. So this formula change that is proposed in Senate File 1675 would serve to move some dollars from that more volatile property value component into a base, and therefore as the market values change, the dollars would stabilize. So, for example, in my region, the southeastern 11 counties, currently we are actually receiving less in regional library basic system support than when the last $5 million was added, that the property values in the southeast in relationship to the rest of the state have changed that dramatically. And so it makes it very difficult to budget for all of the 12 regional libraries because we'd never know until population and property value calculations have been done as to whether or not our budget will go up or whether it will go down. So we're hoping that you will fund regional library basic system support, but also take into consideration that we have a number of library system boards around the state that are unanimously supporting a change in the formula. Thank you very much for your attention to this, to Senate File 1675.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just remembered my last point that I had forgotten earlier. Most, if not all, of the regional systems agree that this adjustment should be made.
Correct.
Yes.
And I think that is an approach that I have appreciated very much when working with the libraries, is that they try very hard to get a consensus of all of their members to before some changes are made. So I appreciate that, and that handout helps a lot as to the explanation. And I would hope that the committee would take this into consideration when you work on your omnibus bill.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address on file 1675? Further comments, questions from the committee? We appreciate that the agreement was reached, and as stated on earlier proposals, we'll look at the dollars and what's available, and Senate File 1675 will be laid over for a possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You. Next, Senate File 1179, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Fabulous Monday morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1179.
Fabulous.
It's a fabrication lab grant appropriation for Independent School District 11. And with me today, I have Jessica Lipa, who is the Director and Principal of Career and Technical Education for the Anoka-Hennepin STEP program, which this body created STEP years ago, and its correlation and connection to our career and tech fields throughout, not only as a state leader, but as well-known nationally. Also with me is Mike Hilber, who's the industrial tech teacher at Anoka Hennepin STEP, and then Assistant Superintendent Jeff McGonigal, who is here with us as well. So we all know Minnesota is projecting a skills gap by 2022, and we're facing a major labor shortage. Today, students need to be exposed to opportunities in STEM, science, technology, education, and math. Did I say that right, Senator Claussen? And career technical education at a young age to assure that we're preparing them for necessary careers. Fabrication Lab, also known as Fab Lab, is the educational outreach component of MIT's Center for Bits and Atoms, another acronym called CBA. Fab Lab is a platform for learning and innovation. It's a place to create, to learn, to mentor, to invent. To be a Fab Lab means connecting to a global community of learners, educators, technologists, researchers, makers, innovators, a knowledge-sharing network that spans over 30 countries. A Fab Lab is comprised of off-the-shelf, industrial-grade fabrication electronic tools wrapped in an open-source software and programs written by researchers at MIT Center for Bits and Atoms. Originally designed for communities as a prototyping platforms for local entrepreneurship, Fab Labs are increasingly being adopted by schools as platforms for project-based hands-on STEM education. Users learn by designing and creating objects of personal interest and import. And Mr. Chair, one of the things that makes this one unique is the relationship that the STEP program Anoka Hennepin has with the Anoka Ramsey Community College, Anoka Ramsey Tech College, which is right next door. This system will be placed at the Tech College and open not only for the students, the high school students, but middle school students, grade school students, and the community at large. So that's quite a unique relationship that STEP has got up there with Anoka Tech College. So right now I'd like to turn over to our testifiers, and then we'll be ready to stand for questions. So Ms. Lipa.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much this morning. My name is Jessica Lipa, and I'm the director of the STEP program, which is a secondary technical education program in Anoka Hennepin School District. We are a very unique program to this state. We are a building that was built right onto the campus of Anoka Technical College. We have a lot of partnerships and pathways with Anoka Technical College, Anoka Ramsey Community College, and other college partners throughout the state. We are a school that serves primarily 11th and 12th grade students and a few 10th grade students as well, and we provide students with educational opportunities in high-skill, high-wage, and high-demand occupations. Our goal is to work with our workforce partners, and we project out to 2022 and beyond to provide real-world, relevant educational experiences. Our student is typically the kid in the middle, the student that maybe didn't know that they could do well in college, and we try to show them the way. All of our courses offer college credit opportunities, either through articulated college credit or concurrent enrollment opportunities as well. And we also offer a variety of industry certifications, and we offer careers in the areas of in the wide range of engineering, manufacturing, welding, nursing assistant, EMT, sports medicine, cosmetology, etc. We know through state data that approximately 57% of our careers will need a technical skill, and many of them requiring a two-year degree or credential. We also know that our students and workers are coming into the workforce unprepared with an incredible skills gap, and we believe that this would help us to provide an opportunity to show students opportunities within a variety of areas for innovation and skill. We need an education system that prepares our students with the skills that are necessary to meet the high demand of our 21st century workforce, and our school is aimed to support our high school students to prepare them for post-secondary education. Career and tech ed programs like STEP play a critical role in aiding students' successful transition from secondary to post-secondary education, ensuring that they are prepared for the necessary careers with essential skills required in our workforce. We need programs that are innovative and ensure that our students have the opportunity to gain the skills necessary. Implementing a Fab Lab in Anoka Hennepin School District would provide real-world, relevant experiences for students that promote innovation, collaboration, and an in-depth experience in STEM education and high-skill, high-wage, and high-demand careers. The local business community supports and provides collaboration and partnerships with STEP and Anoka Tech as a pathway to meeting the critical technical and academic demands of the 21st century workforce and improving our community's economy. We have a long-standing partnerships that provide within our community as they serve on joint advisory boards, guide our curriculum, and provide necessary professional development for our teachers. Our demographic area has a critical need for manufacturing, and our local workforce and the implementation of a fab lab would allow our secondary schools, post-secondary students, and local workforce to partner together to show students the necessary skills. Imagine our seventh grade students getting to come out and experience these things and learn about how to innovate and develop. Maybe in an art class, this is a cross-curricular opportunity for students. It doesn't necessarily have to be in manufacturing, but could be an opportunity for our cosmetology students to design cosmetology products. And so that's where we're really trying to make this a cross-curricular thing. The implementation of a fab lab would help us to strengthen our transition from secondary to post-secondary education, eventually fulfilling our workforce by closing our skills gap and providing our students with the technology, the curriculum, and opportunities and innovation that expands beyond manufacturing, but is really an opportunity for all students at all grade levels to experience this. Imagine if we encouraged all of our more non-traditional females to get into manufacturing through more creative ways. A fab lab in our community would be another way to collaborate with our partners at Anoka Technical College, Anoka Ramsey, and the Professional Workforce Training Center to engage our high school students, our college, and our local business and industry to work together. Because of these reasons, we will greatly support Senator Hoffman's bill to benefit students through a fab lab in our community.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mike Hiller. I teach engineering and manufacturing at STEP. This fab lab is a really exciting thing for us to be able to do. And, you know, to look at what students can do, one of the things that I always like to bring out, I have this little story that I like to share, is, you know, we have a really good program with engineering students, and they can design things on their 3D CAD designing, and they look at things. And we have a group that did a really nice final project. A whole bunch of them do it at our Blaine High School. And we have a couple of 3D printers, and, you know, they made some parts, and they said, this is great. And they came over to STEP, and they said, could you make this out of steel? It's plastic now. It doesn't work. Could you make it out of steel? And I said, sure. You know, bring me the prints. Come on over, and we'll take a look at it. They brought me the prints. I looked at it, and I said, do you really think we can make this? Well, yeah, it's on the computer screen. It works great. I said, no, do you really think we can make this in a machine? Well, the 3D printer made it. I said, I understand that. But can we really make this in a machine? They had no idea the process of what it took to make a part like that. And we did it. We had to change some things, and the students learned how to do it. But you have to go from that transition. It's great for those kids to have those ideas, but to real world look at those things and understand how it's made and maybe what the cost is and what it takes to do all that is a huge thing for students to look at. And we have to be able to let those students see those things, understand how it's done, understand how it's made, understand the costs, the manufacturing, and then they go from there, and their ideas just snowball from there. I can really make this like this. I can really do this. Oh, this works great. It's wonderful to see that. And I think students, and any student, we're talking from seventh grade to elementary students to high school, to come in and see that experience and be able to do it hands-on, sitting right there, working on the machines, looking at those things, to do that and understand what it takes to build something and make something and make their dreams come true. When they look at these things, yeah, it's great to look at, but can I really do this? And they have to think outside the box a little bit. You know, there's always not just one way to do things. They've got to be able to experiment, and maybe they're going to come up with something better. And that's the whole idea of doing this fab lab.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeffrey McGonigal, Associate Superintendent for High Schools for Anoka-Hennepin, and I'll just add that a fabrication lab is something that I think would be merited in many places in the state for a lot of programs in the future. But what Anoka-Hennepin offers to this kind of a system right now is that we have existing curriculum where students are doing the design and from design can create devices if they had a resource like this. And we have existing infrastructure. We have existing transportation. We know how to get our eighth graders over to STEP when we need them at STEP. We know how to get our high school students over to STEP. And we know how to work with Anoka Ramsey Community College and Anoka Technical College. So a fabrication lab in this setting will get immediate use because we have everything set up for that to take place. And we're grateful for the opportunity to present our idea to this committee. Thank you, Senator Hoffman, as well.
Thank you.
Great.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address Senate File 1179? We'll open it up for questions from the committee. Certainly, you touch all the right bases when you talk about the partnerships with the business industry, with the college, the technical college, and you know, we commend that. I had one question. What is the total cost, and what type of participation are you looking at from partners?
Mr. Chair and members, what we're asking is a small one-time investment of $200,000, and then you look at the in-kind, and I think either Ms. Leap or Mr. McGonigal can get deep in the weeds on just the return that they get from the Anoka Technical College side as well as the school district side. So, yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. As Senator Hoffman stated, we're asking for that small, the $200,000 to begin the startup cost of it. Anoka Hennepin continues and always has provided the cost of the FTE of the teacher, plus we have a rental agreement with Anoka Technical College. Anoka Technical College also then would have the in-kind contribution of their FTE that would continue to use it, and et cetera.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I also interject a little bit? You know, this is also going to be open to the public so that, you know, at one point, once we get this rolling and stuff, there's, you know, could be added, you know, small charges that we could charge for materials and stuff. So it's basically pretty self-funded once it gets rolling, because the public can come in there, use the equipment, use those type of things. We charge a small fee for them to come in, sign in groups. And that's where that cost just kind of pays for itself in the long run with everything, and it's really a great idea. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot of inventors out there that want to be able to do things like this that don't have the equipment, and we'd be able to offer those things to those people to come out and do that.
Okay, and the property, is it a lease then that you have with the technical college?
We would lease the space. The equipment would be owned through the high school and those type of things, and we would share some of those things if the colleges would like to add more equipment into those areas and stuff. But we would be sharing as much facilities as we can with everybody.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, you're sharing, you know, the same students, and that's the bottom line, that they have access. Just in my own district, Mata Midai, they're so proud, as am I, of their Fab Lab. Century College is doing additional work, and I think through the bonding bill for their Fab Lab for some assistance. So as long as those partnerships are in play, that's the most important part. So Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, sounds like a wonderful opportunity. I'm wondering if there's been any consideration of taking advantage of the leveraged equipment within the Minscu system. They have a program where we put some money towards leveraged equipment for them to use, and then there's a match from local businesses.
That sounds good.
Mr. Chair and That's members, there was discussion on that. That's such a strapped system in and of itself, especially in our area, where this way it was a way of a true partnership with the school district, getting that small grant to get it really going in the tech college. And Mr. McGonigal, I know that has been talked about in the past. If you can,
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, yes, we would look for any opportunity for a revenue stream. That one is not familiar to me immediately, but we were in the companion bill in the House. Vice President Hoganson came and spoke about their interest in working with us in this regard. We also want to partner with local businesses. We believe that there will be interest both in terms of supply, so I guess in-kind kind of resources that might be available, because I sit on a committee with the Tech College, I can't remember the name of the committee, but it represents a lot of local businesses, and this topic caused a lot of smiles when we brought it up at the last meeting. Nobody immediately came up with something, but they all started thinking about how Conexus Energy could use this room or their employees, et cetera. So I think that we're putting it in a situation where, as I was saying before, so many things are already in place that we think some of those things can take place quickly.
Mr. Chair, yes, Mr. Hilber will tell you about his grant that he got that was matching as well.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, we also, what started this is that First Technologies out of Wisconsin, who partners with schools for offering software and different equipment for this, had a grant, and what we did is we applied for it, and surprisingly, we got it, but we have to match it. And in order to do that, this is where we're asking for it. So we do have a matching fund that's going to start giving us some things for equipment and stuff like that, too. And that's what we're hoping this bill will help us with this.
Senator Bonoff.
Yeah, follow up. Mr. Chair, thank you. That makes sense. And it sounds as though the primary recipient of the Fab Lab would be the high school students, so it makes sense to ask for that grant out of the E-12.
Thank you. Further comments, questions from committee? If not, excellent proposal, and Senate File 1179 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Senate File 524, Senator Clausen on the Principals Academy. And members, we have heard this in policy, so we have the background on what the Academy is, the good things. And so you know, you've reached the first round of review. Now it would be more regarding the finance, and I believe we have an author's amendment addressing finance. That's the A5. And to put in the shape that you'd like for finance, Senator Clausen moves the A5 amendment, which you have before you. All in favor, indicate aye.
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 Opposed? So we have the Senate File 524 as amended. Senator Clausen.
Well, good morning, Chairman Wieger and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 524, which provides a grant appropriation from the Commissioner of Education to support effective leadership training for school principals. And, Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment as well. And, again, it provides some clarifying language. There are six areas in the bill. If we could do a correct all for references where it says Minnesota Principals Program, it should say Minnesota Principals Academy.
Okay. On that oral amendment, I'll ask staff, is that clear for subsequent corrections that will be made?
Mr. Chair, members, maybe the motion would be, may I ask,
yep,
Ms. Butler, whether it's better to do line by line or just kind of a global change?
Yeah. Global?
Yeah. So anywhere in the A5 document where you see Minnesota Principals Program, delete Minnesota Principals Program and insert Minnesota Principals Academy.
That would be Senator Clausen's motion. Discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. A5 as amended again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota Principal Leadership Programs provide school leaders with the knowledge, tools, and strategies to create schools where all students graduate college and career ready. The legislature established funding for the Principal's Leadership Development Program in 2005. In collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Education, Minnesota Elementary and Secondary School Principals Association, and the University of Minnesota. Currently, the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State University Mankato offer principal leadership programs. And since 2005, the University of Minnesota Principals Academy and the Minnesota State Mankato's Institute for Courageous Principal Leadership Program have trained over 400 principals. Unfortunately, funding was discontinued during the 2010 legislative session, and Senate File 524 restores funding for effective leadership training for principals. I would like to turn your attention to the handouts which provide an overview of the principal's development program and a map identifying past program participants. And testifiers with us today, Katie Peckell, principal in residence at the University of Minnesota, Candace Reskin, chair of the Department of Education Leadership, Minnesota State Mankato, and Melissa Kruhl, co-founder of the Principals Institute College of Education at the University State or Minnesota State University Mankato, and Joel Lear, principal at Northfield High School.
Okay. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Katie Peckell. I'm the principal in residence at the University of Minnesota. Appreciate your time this morning and hearing from us. And I will just take a brief moment of your time because I think it's most important to hear from the folks that are being most impacted by the program. So we have with us today Joel Lear, principal of Northfield High School. As was already mentioned, the principal leadership program is a certain need across the state of Minnesota. As you'll see in the map before you from the participants that have participated in the program at the U since 2006, that is highly concentrated in the Twin Cities area. We have run a cohort in Grand Rapids and one in southeastern Minnesota in the Rochester area. But one of the reasons why we are coming to you today with a specific need for funding is to also expand the program to reach greater Minnesota, which is part of the legislation as you see before you today. While I'm here to answer any questions about the program's operations and what we've experienced, I am going to ask Mr. Lear at this time to share his experiences as a current participant in the Minnesota Principals Academy.
Thank you, Mr. Lear.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, excuse me, my name is Joel Lear, and I'm the principal of Northfield High School and a member of the current cohort of the Minnesota Principals Academy. Thank you for allowing me a chance to share with you today just a few of the reasons why I hope you will support funding for the continuation of the academy. I don't take legislative funding lightly. I've been an educator for over 20 years, and this is the first time I've taken the time to come to the Capitol to convince legislators, quite frankly, to do anything. Part of that 9 years has been Senator Dahl's backdoor agreement that I wouldn't come up and bother him during his legislative session.
We knew that would come up. So.
That's what I figured. But that should tell you a little bit about how strongly I feel about the Principals Academy. Simply put, I have experienced no better professional development in my teaching and administrative career than I have with the Minnesota Principals Academy, and I think it's critical that this opportunity be continued for other administrators across the state. First, the fact that it's cohort-based has allowed my colleagues and me to learn from each other over the course of the last 2 years. The diverse experiences and settings from which we all come allows us to develop a comprehensive understanding of many of the pressing issues facing K-12 across our state. Too often, the busyness of our work prevents us from seeking out new learning. The Minnesota Principals Academy has pushed us to challenge our thinking, develop new ideas, and learn from others in a way that will make our own schools better. Numerous times in the last 2 years, I have furiously scribbled an idea that I heard at the academy in order to bring it back to my school and make my school better. I can only hope my ideas have had a similar impact on my fellow cohort members. Second, the Academy offers us a clear and coherent deep curriculum that addresses not only leadership, but relevant topics like strategic thinking, race and equity, literacy, mathematics and science instruction, teacher development, evaluation and coaching, student engagement and motivation, and data and assessment literacy for improved instruction and learning. All of the tools that will make administrators better are here in the Academy. Further, my colleagues and I in the Academy have been able to engage with the University of Minnesota research faculty. Throughout the Academy, research faculty have attended it as guest lecturers to share with us their most recent research on reading intervention, ELL instruction, race and culture in schools, and multi-tiered systems of support within special education, just to name a few. I cannot overstate the value of providing a vehicle for school administrators to access the latest research in our field. And while you may think with today's technology that research is easy to access, the Academy gives us the research and the time to examine, study, and digest it in a way that helps us put it into practice and move our schools forward. In addition, the Academy has asked us to engage in an action learning project that has allowed each of us to more deeply explore a situation in our school, study that topic, propose and try out new strategies, and measure and learn from the process. In my case, I have identified a shortcoming with the way we at Northfield High School identify students for academic interventions. Through the Action Learning Project, I have worked with support staff to identify multiple data points to more scientifically select students for those supports that previously were determined based on anecdotal evidence, a personal opinion, or perhaps even a gut feeling. This, in turn, will help us more accurately identify the types of support learners need and better serve them. In summary, the Minnesota Principals Academy has helped me grow as a leader. The support I'm encouraging you to provide future cohorts of the Academy will ensure that more principals across the state are able to benefit in the same ways that I have. It will also send a strong message that you as legislators know the research that says great schools need great leaders and are willing to put funding behind that research. Thank you for your time and your support of the Minnesota Principals Academy.
Thank you. Sarah Dahl, do you have any questions?
No, we'll.
Here's your chance.
Okay. We'll get back to that. Okay.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The parts that I can add as a representative of Minnesota State University Mankato, I'm Melissa Krulla, and I work in partnership with my colleague Candace Raskin on the Institute for Courageous Principal Leadership. We're 4 years in the making. And many of the things that you've heard already are aspects of the same program that we offer when it comes to developing principals to become transformational leaders. So let me just add a couple of other points. We are so pleased that you're willing to consider this reinvestment to supporting the development of principals as what we know to be key leverage points in changing results for students in schools. And so the bottom line for us is that as principals develop and become stronger with greater capacity, results for kids change and improve significantly. So that's really what this program is about. It's all about improving results for students. The reinvestment really supports us in expanding the program, offering it to more principals, and bolstering the curriculum and strengthening it based on best practice. So with that, I will rest and take questions if you have them, and we, again, appreciate your support and consideration of Senate File 524.
Thank you. Sarah Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to come. I've been waiting for this bill to come up. I have a principal in my district that is part of the cohort, the current cohort, and the excitement that she shared with me and the feeling that she could bring things back immediately but also have a focused research ability to take on new things, but there's so many things you could do. This really pulls you in and allows you to do something in a focused way immediately and then in the long term, too. So I really support this bill, and thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Klassen.
Thank you for sharing. Okay, additional testimony? Okay, is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the proposal for the Senate File 524 as amended? Further comments from the committee? Senator Bonoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Klassen. Ms. Krall, particularly good to see you here again. Ms. Krall was an outstanding superintendent in Eden Prairie. And as we look at needing to implement teacher evaluation statewide, I think this is a really good complement to making sure our principals have the capacity and the skills to be able to do that, and particularly in outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota. So thanks for bringing it forward.
Yes, Ms. Bacall.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that comment, Senator Bonoff. I just want to that score, I would like to say we were able to engage with the Minnesota Department of Education and Greg Keith to collaborate on a specific unit around teacher development and evaluation as a result of the legislation. And it was really remarkable because in our current cohort, we have 30 members representing about 25 different districts who all were very confident in the fact that they had a really strong teacher development and evaluation plan in place. And after they had the opportunity to come together and share the things that they were doing across those districts, they walked away really seeing areas of strengths in their own plan, but also areas for improvement that they were going to take back to their districts.
Great.
Just a comment. Senator Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm looking forward to it, as well as many of the young teachers and principals up in northwestern Minnesota, that we could add to your list some from that area, and I'm sure there's, you know, others that are excited about it too. So I think this will be a good couple years. Thank you.
Further comments, questions? If not, Senate File 524 is amended. Be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator Klassen, and testifiers. We move next to Senate File 1017, Senator Dahl, after school community learning grants. And I would invite your testifiers to join you at the table if there's room.
this piece of paper.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be here.
They're ripping through these things, Chuck.
Welcome, everybody. I think we can get another chair up there so you're together. And a reminder, when we get to each of you, state your name for the record so we have it for our tape and for those that may be viewing. Senator Dahl, Senate File 1017.
Mr. Chair and members, and I had 10 inches of snow in Northfield this morning. And the dumbest thing I did last week was put away all my kids' sleds and toboggans. So anyway, I got those out last night at 10 p.m. It's good to be here today. I presented this bill actually to the Minnesota Youth Council last week, and it passed 25-0. So I just want you to know that it has a good track record so far. This particular bill, Senate File 1017, creates a competitive grant program to support community-based organizations, schools, child care centers that service young people in kindergarten through grade 12, after school, and during non-school hours.
Same thing.
Grants must be used to offer a broad array of enrichment activities to promote positive youth development, including art, music, community engagement, literacy, technology education, health, and recreation programs. And there's a process, a criteria that's developed by the Commissioner of Education to make sure that reaches the appropriate goals that are mentioned in the particular bill. So I have some testifiers that will get in a little bit more detail on how they see this working. And so I believe.
And Senator Dahl, did you have a dollar amount in mind yet for?
You know, yes, thank you, Chair. I think we're going to, if I could, an oral amendment, put $5 million in each of the 2 years of the biennium.
Okay, at lines 212 and 213 on the appropriation, Senator Dahl, as an author's amendment, would include $5 million for each year. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. And we'll proceed now with testifiers, and welcome to each of you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1017. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kanine, and I am the Executive Director of Ignite After School. We are Minnesota's statewide after-school network. And as a network, we don't provide after-school opportunities, but instead we bring all of the various stakeholders from park and recreation to libraries, community ed and schools, as well as nonprofits such as the YMCA together to partner and to address access issues and quality issues in after-school across the state of Minnesota. We at Ignite define after-school as activities that take place outside the school day or during the summer, and they offer a range of youth development experiences, from art and literacy to health and community engagement programs. And this bill is designed to support after-school to take place in a variety of settings, such as community organizations and schools. We have very strong research, and I believe you all have a handout in front of you that with some charts that show this, that high-quality after-school programs are not just nice, but they deliver on our goal to ensure that young people are safe, successful in school, and ready for college and career. So you have a handout that illustrates some really exciting research, fairly new research from Deborah Vandal that shows that when young people participate regularly in high-quality after-school during the elementary years, it's linked to narrowing the gap in math achievement at grade 5. And another study there shows that youth who participate in high-quality after-school programs show improvement in school attendance, behavior, and core academics. So we know that participation in high-quality after-school programs works, but we have really seen the investments necessary to ensure that it works for Minnesota going down over the last couple of years. And we have a clear gap in access. A lot of young people do not have these opportunities in Minnesota, in our state, and our handout shows that it's often young people who could most benefit who don't have access. So while many youth participate 3 days per week in after school, we see that fewer than 50% of low-income youth participate often enough to see the full benefits. And your handout also shows how state investments in after school have decreased over the last 6-7 years, further exacerbating Minnesota's community's efforts to meet the need. So I want to walk through a little bit about what this bill covers. We're proposing that MDE establish a competitive grant program to fund after-school and summer programs. We propose that this funding target programs that build young people's capacity to become productive adults, to develop the skills and behaviors necessary to succeed in post-secondary and career opportunities, and that encourage school attendance and improve school performance. We also are looking for applicants to have to demonstrate how their program is aligned with research and best practices in after school. And also, we'd like to serve primarily low-income youth to target and address youth most at risk of experiencing the opportunity gap that I talked about earlier. We also want to ensure distribution across the state, and we'd like to also strengthen the quality of after-school programs by providing professional development and technical assistance so that programs can deliver on those positive outcomes. And that's the end of my testimony, and I know we have some others as well.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joshua Kakowski. I'm an extension educator with the University of Minnesota Extension with 4-H Youth Development Program. I'm based out of Moorhead, and I currently live there. Thank you for the opportunity to take a few minutes of your time to share about what's going on with out-of-school time in 4-H in northwestern Minnesota. Across the state, over 65,000 youth currently participate in 4-H, with 10,000 of those up in northwestern, over 10,000 in northwestern Minnesota. So we are not a small program, and we have broad reach throughout the state, and we have a broad reach in northwestern Minnesota. The mission of 4-H is to provide youth with opportunities to learn and lead so they can contribute to their community, take on leadership roles, and educate others. Informal learning often motivates kids to explore their interests, develop skills, and be more persistent in solving problems. Through the 4-H experiential learning model, youth build skills that can transfer to many careers. In fact, 4-H youth are more likely to pursue future study or careers in science, engineering, or technology, and this is according to a national study by the Tufts University. For our program evaluations, we can see that young people who participate in 4-H clubs, after-school programming, or other leadership programs, in comparison to those who do not, attend school at a consistently higher level, score higher on our standardized tests of math and reading, and also have fewer problems as well. After-school programs work with school learning to build key college and career readiness skills. In fact, youth have over 1,900 hours of non-school time. That's the equivalent of a full-time job. How they spend this time can make as much of a difference in their lives as what they do in school. And as a former high school teacher myself, I taught high school for 9 years, I've seen the firsthand power after-school programs to support the learning and growth of the students. After-school program success is measured by the impacts in their communities, not just on a test for that. Some recent examples, in Park Rapids, the Hubbard County 4-H Ambassadors, which is a Lake Leadership Council, have quoted him saying that 4-H helps them come out of their shell, helps them be their own person. Another example, a program that I work with directly at Churches United for the Homeless in Moorhead, talks about a program targeting families that live there. One of the youth members said to me personally, "I haven't been challenged like this in a long time." That's what she said to me last summer. Extension and 4-H strongly believes in partnering with other organizations that provide services to youth in these communities. We can't do this alone. We share the university's research and best practices through youth development, through workshops, training opportunities, and other youth organizations. Personally, I have opportunities to work with and coordinate programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs up in northwestern Minnesota, the YMCA, schools, and school-based community education. Recently had a convening of after-school providers to talk about the successes and some of the gaps. We heard how schools wish to provide a greater diversity of opportunities and the number of people involved there. In rural communities, especially in northwestern Minnesota, we often find that young people don't have the exposure to these opportunities that can explore interests that expand their sense of what the future can possibly hold. Distance can sometimes create this isolation, and we are working together to partner with our communities, and we can begin to close these gaps. We know that many youth like to participate in after-school programs, but there are significant barriers, such as transportation, program fees, indirect costs as well, and the availability of qualified staff. Through this grant funding, youth development programs, we would be able to reach more youth. The opportunity to share.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Deputy Chief Mark Brulia of the Brooklyn Park Police Department. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about how this impacts crime and really the reduction of crime from my point of view. have some experience in this world. Back in 2007, the city of Brooklyn Park employed PERF, which is a police executive research forum, to come in and evaluate the city at that point, which we had an unproportionate amount of violent crime that involved youth. The results of that is, to really no surprise, but they quantified that we had lack of opportunity for our youth in the community, and that was resulting to be in a very high crime rate and violent crime. Over the past 7 years, we've spent a lot of time and efforts in the city of Brooklyn Park to engage our youth, and we've seen the results of double digits reduction in juvenile crime. With that said, there's a lot of work still to be done. The national research really shows that the majority of juvenile crime occurs between 3 and 6. That is no different than in my community currently. 44.3% of my juvenile crime occurs between the hours of 2 and 8, and 50%, or all half of all juvenile crime, occurs between 2 and 9 o'clock. So these are critical hours in our communities that these kids need to be engaged. I believe program like this does that, and we see that engaging these kids gets them off the streets. The more tangible results is my own experience as a patrolman and my staff. We see kids milling around with nothing to do. And when that happens, it's very predictable. Within an hour, we'll have a crime where those same kids are involved in that. The reality is, the old adage, idle hands are the work of the devil, is true, especially for these kids. They need to be engaged in healthy activities, especially at-risk youth in our communities are in a desperate need for these type of programs. To wrap it up, it's really an investment. We're going to engage these kids one way or another, either in programming or the police or judicial system is going to engage them. So one way or another, I look at it as an investment, and thank you for the opportunity to come speak with you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for your time. My name is Cheryl Lipton, and I am a sophomore at Roseville Area High School. I am in the Youth Leadership Initiative, which is an after-school program through the Waldorf Foundation. The Youth Leadership Initiative, or YLI for short, is a youth-led program that develops young people's leadership skills with a unique curriculum rooted in self-awareness, working with others, and actions in the community. Through YLI, I have learned about my cultural roots, learned the skills to become a leader in a multicultural community, and taking action through the public policy action team, which I am the project manager. Before I joined this after-school program, I would just go home after school and spend the rest of my days doing nothing, which I would call a waste of time. I heard about this after-school program from three of my siblings who had joined before me. When I was eligible to become a participant, I joined as a freshman in high school, not knowing where this program was going to take me. When I first started, I was shy and would stay in my comfort zone. This program deeply challenged me to become who I really am and to be authentic. The youth leaders, return participants who have been chosen to lead the program, came to talk to me and introduce me to other youth who are also in the program. They made me share in small groups and then challenged me to share in a big group discussion. I began to open up, connect with others, and gain new knowledge that I was not learning anywhere else in my life. I learned a lot and began seeing the world and its challenges from different points of view. The youth leaders, wildlife staffs, and volunteers have constantly challenged me, whether leading through facilitating meaningful experiential learning activities or reflecting on my life experiences as I grow into the person I am meant to be. They also helped me to be more determined in my learning by providing me opportunity and resources to gain new knowledge and do better in school. I always admired the youth leaders, but never thought I could be one. However, people believed in me, and I was invited to be a leader. Who would have thought that someone like me, a Korean refugee from Thailand, would become a leader of a program? Especially at my age. But I am. I have been leading other youth for the last years. It has given me a sense of purpose. Through YLI Public Policy Action Team, I now am in front of all of you testifying which is an opportunity I would never have received, nor been able to be brave enough to even try if it was not for YLI. Not only am I growing myself, but other youth are also growing along with me. This program is my second family and my second home. I am comfortable with everyone, and our connection is so strong, I am able to share my feelings and thoughts. After school programs gives youth the opportunity to learn something that is not taught in the classroom, and the opportunity to connect with other youth in a way that doesn't happen in school. As a young person who has proved that after school programs are important for young people to become the best we can be, I ask for you to please vote in favor of this legislation to ensure all Minnesota's youth can access high quality after school programs like the Youth Leadership Initiative. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. T. What a beautiful, inspirational story. We congratulate you. Wonderful job. What do you plan on doing after you graduate?
I'm planning to go to a four-year college and major and get my major, which I want to be a doctor.
Okay. Again, very inspirational. And on behalf of the committee. Comments, questions from the committee? Senator Stump. And
Senator Stump. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a thought. Back when President Clinton was in office, he had set up programs, and some of you may remember that called the Midnight Basketball, and that was basically to try to keep or some activities for those youth that were wandering around on the streets or didn't have anything to do. But back in 2002, I took over chairmanship of the Education Committee, and shortly after that, it was about, I think, either 2003 or 2004, the national economy kind of took a nosedive, and we ended up having a lot of cutbacks. And I remember both Moorhead School District coming in here and the Duluth School District coming in and testifying how when they cut their after-school programs for primarily at that time it was youth that had gotten into some trouble. They weren't necessarily, well, they were delinquent, but they were maybe not necessarily felons or anything. But after when they initiated those programs, they saw the crime rate go down in those neighborhoods where they had after-school programs. And so I think there's a lot of evidence to show that after-school programs really do help structure and keep some of our youth who can get into trouble or will get into trouble, keep them busy. So I applaud the fact that, Senator Dahl and getting back into that, because I think this is one little piece of the overall school education that we need to have in our schools and our neighborhoods.
Thank you. And before Senator Dames, just a heads up, if Ms. Doslin's here, I was going to invite her after Senator Dames' question to just offer any perspective from community ed, extended time, and how this all can work together. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, it's not a question. I do have an oral amendment. On page 1, on line 11, after health, comma, I'd like to add agriculture, comma. And I have spoken about this with the author, and I believe he'll find this a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chair, that would be just fine with me, too.
Okay, that will be included, the reference to agriculture, 1.11. That's noted. Thank you. And is a friendly amendment. And Ms. Doslin, would you like to provide comments regarding the importance of this and existing programs, and then with the proposal that we have a grant program as well? Any thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslund. I represent the Minnesota Community Ed Association. And MCA is part of the statewide after-school Ignite Network, and we support this bill. We have many members that are part of the organization and part of the policy committee and have been provided feedback on the drafting of the legislation, and we do support the request. You will see community ed tomorrow here before your committee talking about local school district community ed program after school programs as well. Thank you, and thank you, Senator Dahl, for your leadership on this.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, probably. Looking at page 2, the subdivision 2, the money, up to 7% of the appropriation may be used for fiscal or for administration, evaluation, et cetera. Is that common? I haven't seen that in similar legislation. I'm wondering if you could explain, talk to about it.
Mr. Chairman, let my testifier address that particular.
Ms. Kunin?
Ms. Kunin.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator. We do believe it's important in providing a competitive grant opportunity for the department to have the resources to do a high-quality grant competition. But also, we also are pairing this a little bit with a federal source of funding called 21st Century Community Learning Center grants that allow for a certain percentage of the funds to be for professional development and technical assistance. And part of that is because in the field, Ignite After School did a study and found that 50% of after school providers feel like they do not have access to the professional development opportunities necessary to really improve their programming and ensure high outcomes. So since the bill is tied to high-quality practice in after school, we also want to make sure that there are the resources available to provide those professional development opportunities across the state. And Ignite After School is the statewide after-school network, is a part of facilitating and providing those trainings with our partners around the state.
Thank you.
And Ms. Kunin, it's your intent then at line 2.14, that it would be the Department of Education that would get up to 7%?
Mr. Chair, yes, that they would get that those resources, and they have a history in the past of either providing those directly or they sometimes contract with others to be able to provide professional development and technical assistance across the state.
Okay. I'll ask Council whether it might be helpful for further clarifying perhaps between the words used and for at line 2.14 to add by the Department of Education. Or is it clear enough?
Mr. Chair, members, certainly I think would add to the clarity to name the department somewhere in that paragraph. And if it's consistent with the author's intent, perhaps at line 2.14, delete used and insert retained by the Department of Minnesota Department of Education.
Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Arneson, so that still allows the department to contract with other organizations that may be necessary to implement the language of the bill?
Mr. Chair, yes.
That's fine.
Okay, we'll entertain that first, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing our attention to that line in the bill. It seems a little bit much to me in terms of the percent. I know that in the Finance Committee, when we've had percents like this, we generally tried to be more at the top would be a 5% range. It does seem high to me to think of that amount going towards administration rather than direct student activities.
If it's the pleasure, Mr. Chair of the committee, I would be open to 5% on that line as well.
Okay. Well, Ms. Kunin, now did the youth council, when they voted 25 to nothing, you know, they wouldn't consider, I don't think.
They didn't question any of the money stuff. They just,
okay.
They just want the program.
Okay. Senator Dahl moves what Mr. Arneson just said and also adds that 7 be changed to 5 in line 2.14. I think the intent is clear. Further discussion? Not. All in favor, indicate aye.
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 Adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1017 as amended. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl, I am trying to figure out how I could incorporate a couple of words in here. Obviously, the Commissioner of Education has to develop a method, but it only says, you know, how to apply for the grants, and then it says the application must include information on, you know, how to do outreach and all of that. But there's really no language in here about academic growth. And I think that's kind of, you know, the intent is not only that, but I would like to name it, because we have a lot of times where the activities are not really linked. And I would like to add, in line 115, it says the commissioner the commissioner shall develop criteria for determining the allocation of the grants and appropriate goals, including we can add something in here, or to succeed in post-secondary education and career opportunities. I guess in line 220, you have some language in here. I was thinking that in the best practices language in 115, we have room to say what that is. And I don't know if you will be open to do that. So it says measurable goals and activities linked to research and best practices aimed at, you know, improving academic outcomes. So that is the direction to the commissioner is clear on that issue. But I just want to hear your opinion. Is it...
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Rey, I don't know. I see your point. On line 1.22, we do have as one of the goals in the application to encourage attendance and improve performance in school. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's good enough, or if you'd like us to consider tightening up that language a little bit more for direction for the commissioner.
Senator Torres-Rey, I think he signaled the intent to work with interested persons on perfecting language. This will be laid over, so there would be that option.
Yes, thank you.
With that understanding, any further discussion, comments? Thank you to each of the testifiers. Senator Dahl, in Senate File 1017 as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And members, we meet tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. See the posted bills for tomorrow, and we'll have full agendas each day. And if there's any particular bill that you have that you've requested that has not been scheduled, please let me know. We are filling up in April right after we return, and would appreciate if you could let me know. We aren't going to be able to get to every single bill, and particularly for subsequent introductions, it's going to be increasingly more difficult. So just a heads up, and please let me know if there's anything you'd like to personally discuss on that. There being no further business, the committee's adjourned.